power spread.
Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network's Look Back at the Clone Wars micro-series.
Against this threat, upon the Jedi Knights falls the duty to lead the newly formed Army of the Republic.
While the full-length Clone Wars show is on summer hiatus, come back to RepublicForces.com this summer and join Dan, Jen, Jerry, Barrett, and Nathan as they look back at all 25 episodes of the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars series that aired from 2003 through 2005.
You have been selected for this task because you are the best, the elite. You all know what to do.
In these matters, trust your insight, we do. May the Force be with you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network, continuing to discuss all things Star Wars animation. Continuing with our coverage of the Clone Wars micro-series, and joining me this evening, as they have been patiently all summer long, are Nathan P. Butler.
Hello, everyone.
Jen.
Hey, guys.
Barrett.
Hey, everybody. It's Barrett, Master Collect Maul from the forums, your Swan Holocron Enhancer.
And Jerry.
Hey, guys. How we doing tonight?
All right, and we are here tonight to discuss Chapter 22 of the Clone Wars micro-series.
I got a question. How many episodes are left? 1,000? 100? 50? Come on, tell me. 25? 10? 2?
Yes, Jerry brings it right up. We jump right into the action with our nervous tick general, voiced by...
That's T.C. Carson, the guy who also does Mace Windu and Kratos from God of War.
Now, does he have to sound like a Jamaican drug dealer? I don't understand where they're going for that.
How many
nobody ever has to sound like a Jamaican drug warrior.
They're sending 50 mon, 50 Jedi to take him down.
Just waiting for Steven Seagal to come behind and snap his neck.
Now, what kind of what kind of species is this gentleman?
He's a Kurivar from Mercana, as I recall. He's not really a very well-traveled species. It's not a species we see a whole lot.
I was going to say, where have we seen that? Have we seen him in one of the live-action series? Was he a pod racer? You know, where have we seen this guy before? Or not this guy, but his species.
Well, the guy we haven't actually seen before, but I mean, he's the same species as the Corporate Alliance leader, Passel Argent, I believe is how you say his name, from Attack of the Clones. So, I mean, we've seen the species before, but he's one of these ones that the species was introduced just for the prequels. It wasn't like something we should have been seeing for decades. Although I guess if he was introduced in Attack of the Clones, we're almost at a decade of this species, because next year is the 10th anniversary.
Well, I'm sure one thing that makes him probably less recognizable is that headwear that he's got on. So I didn't really connect him with anybody, certainly not from a film like Attack of the Clones.
The dashiki? That's what we call it. It's called the dashiki.
Well, the costume is. I mean, they existed as of The Phantom Menace. They were sort of brought into the limelight with Attack of the Clones by being the species of the Corporate Alliance head. But no, this is not a... I mean, this is a character we've seen maybe in a couple of cartoons. We've actually seen them probably used more often in the web comics almost than anywhere else, the ones that go with the Clone Wars cartoon series to tie the Corporate Alliance and such into other things. I'm not surprised we haven't seen them a little bit more often. And when we have seen them before, they've been wearing those like weird, almost like monk robes with the funky things on top of their heads most of the time. This outfit that he's wearing, this military outfit, is nothing like what we tend to see his species in. So with animation and the different costume, you know, it's real easy for the species to slip right on by.
Nathan, until you said the monk robe thing, I still had no idea who you were talking about, but now I know. Yeah.
Now, Nathan, to be clear, just to go a little Han Solo trilogy, we're not talking about the corporate sector, are we? This is a different corporate alliance that doesn't have anything to do with the corporate sector that we saw in the Brian Daley books, or is there some connection?
The corporate alliance is one of these creations of Lucas that got developed and kind of thrown into the universe right around 2002-ish, a little bit before that, as they're, you know, kind of building everything up for the prequels. So the corporate sector, which was a creation of Brian Daley, I think they've done some connecting between the two as far as like business interests go. I'm not entirely familiar with it, but I know that this is a Lucas creation, whereas the other one was a Daleyism.
We see that there are merely two Jedi leading this attack, and they are Anakin and Obi-Wan. And they both strike a dramatic pose, which leads us into a montage of Anakin's adventures.
I like to think of it as a montage of Anakin just being awesome.
And notice it's a montage of Anakin being awesome for the most part without his scar, which lets us know that this has to take place, at least the way that they have shoehorned it all in back during the 2002 to 2008 sort of structuring of the Clone Wars. It's got to be after he was knighted, which means it's got to be after Yoda Dark Rendezvous and that bit that we saw in the previous episode of the micro series. But it also has to be before Dreadnoughts of Rendili when he gets the scar. There's not a lot of time that they've shoehorned much of this montage into.
You know, it's interesting going back and when we finished when I finished watching these episodes, I went back and actually, I think for the first time ever, watched the feature at Connecting the Dots. And they talk about how proud they were that they were told that, oh, that we've got this moment coming and you've got to kind of fit this into your story. And we've got this coming. You got to fit this in. The scar was never mentioned. So at least to their credit, or at least to the saving everybody a migraine, they didn't have to try to fit that in here for that to be shot straight down the crapper and other material.
This whole thing really confused me as to when it takes place, because all of a sudden Anakin is much older looking, or at least his hair has grown out to like Fabio state. It's kind of distracting to me, actually, but like, it takes a long time for your hair to grow out that long. And are we supposed to assume that like the last episodes took place like at the very beginning of the Clone Wars and this is like right up at the end? Because where did the rest of that time go? Like, that jarred me. I mean, I can kind of assume that maybe it's just supposed to be over the course of like the 3 years or so, but that struck me that there's no in-between phase for him.
Now, Jen, there's one thing I think we need to realize. Similar to like in The Phantom Menace, when Anakin, the little boy Anakin, became a Padawan, suddenly he has the little braid out of the back. I think there's something tied into the midichlorians and the ability to just do whatever you want with your hair.
I never thought about
like
that.
A yeah,
the Wookiee, all of a sudden he has this long hair.
The Wookiees in the episode are actually Anakin in disguise. Now, from a time standpoint, to kind of put this in perspective here, she's right. This does make a big jump. The idea was that the first part of it is early in the Clone Wars, presumably, and then there's this giant gap, and then we get the stuff leading up directly into Revenge of the Sith, because the first stuff was aired closer to when we saw Attack of the Clones in theaters, and then, of course, the other stuff is leading in directly into the months where we're leading into Revenge of the Sith in real life. What they basically did was they said, okay, the montage jumps us, but we're not entirely sure how much it jumps us, and just kind of shoehorned it in here and there. So the short version of it is, 4 months after Geonosis is when most of the other stuff takes place, minus the Kit Fisto thing, which is about a month later, minus the Asajj Ventress stuff, which is about a month after Geonosis. And then we got this giant gap of all the way up to about 2.5 years after Attack of the Clones, about 6 months, give or take, before Revenge of the Sith happens. And that's where we pick up. This montage is basically 2 years of time leaping forward. And it's funny you mention the hair thing, because that was one of the big questions about, well, wait a second, Anakin's getting knighted with his short Padawan hair, whereas in the EU and all the stuff that this was shoehorned into when that knighting was pushed way, way back, all the stories circling around it, it's got Anakin with the long hair already. So they just basically said you can't pay attention to hair lengths, which seems like that's going to be what they're going to have to say again, because now we've got the current Clone Wars series where Anakin is a knight with not as short a hair as he had in Attack of the Clones, but not as long a hair as in Revenge of the Sith, and yet he's getting knighted with short hair, he's seen fighting here with the long hair, and so on and so on. It's basically one of the jokes about continuity when it comes to the Clone Wars is Anakin's ever-changing hair, right alongside Asajj Ventress's ever-changing tattoos.
Well, don't they all turn into Razor Ramon after they come knighted? I mean, isn't in Episode 2, doesn't Obi-Wan have the long hair also? You know, it seems like when the Jedis become Jedi Knights, they grow out their hair, you know. I just want to see what happened when Mace became Jedi Knight. You know, did he have a big old shaft afro? You know, he grew it out when he became a Jedi Knight.
I cannot believe you just referenced Razor Ramon.
Isn't that what Jen said, Razor Ramon?
No.
Well, it does look like Razor Ramon hair to me.
You know, after we have the Anakin is awesome montage, what'd you guys think about this like incredible weapon the Separatists apparently have that can put Jedi Knights helplessly into a bubble? I mean, it kind of reminds me, I have this, I'm looking right at him, I have this hamster, and I have one of those little balls that you put him in, and you know, you put the cap on the side, he just runs freely throughout the house. That's what they look like they're throwing him into. It's like, that's a cool weapon. They need to use that all the time. Apparently it doesn't work on Anakin, though.
You think it's maybe the answer to Kit Fisto being able to create force underwater bowling balls? His ability.
I got
to
your air bubble right here.
Exactly.
Well, when did the Separatists started taking prisoners? You know, do they have holding cells for these Jedi? It's like, you know, in another montage, they're taking clones as prisoners.
You mean like the Citadel, maybe?
Yes. Well, this is before. This is before the Citadel. I assume that this is before the Citadel.
Oh, who knows?
And we don't know when the Citadel was built anyway, but we just know it was built. But the thing is that when did they start taking prisoners? When did they start making less than lethal weapons for the Jedi, for their enemies?
Well, I think it's a good way to like just contain them, and heck, you could stomp on them from there. But I mean, I think there is a decent strategy with the Jedi to say, hey, you got to just neutralize their power first, and then we can, you know, do whatever we want to them. But then Anakin comes along, is like, oh, hey guys, no problem, I got this. Bubble gun, bubble gun, bubble gun.
Well, you know, there is sort of a precedent for it. I mean, you look at Attack of the Clones, and Dooku captured Obi-Wan trying to essentially taint his mind in a sense. In the EU, you have Dooku getting close to Jedi, often because of capture and trying to seduce him to his, or them to his side. You also have the current Clone Wars Secret Mission series that is a spinoff of the current cartoon series. And in that you have, what is his name? Ring Soul Ambase. There's this Jedi Master character who was an old friend of Dooku's who gets captured, and Dooku is attempting to essentially kind of play the same thing as with Obi-Wan. Yo, by the way, the Senate, it's really controlled by Sidious, et cetera, et cetera. So, assuming that they're going to be turned over to Dooku or to Sidious or to whomever for some tainting, as opposed to just being stuck in a cage somewhere to wait out the war, there's at least some precedent for it.
Along those lines, it's more of our modern or our current Clone Wars series that depicts the Separatists as just showing up bent on killing everyone and everything that opposes them and then some. In this series and in this montage a lot, we see that the Separatists just want to win. They'll take prisoners. They're not bent on killing everyone. They just want their conquest, or they want to control the planet or the system, not so much wipe out every living thing that comes in their crosshairs.
I've been watching the recent Doctor Who stuff in the last month or so, trying to get caught up on the newer ones before I go back to the older ones. And I keep laughing when we see the Daleks or the Cybermen with their exterminate, exterminate, or delete, delete. And it strikes me, based on what Dan just said, that it's almost like in the current Clone Wars series, they've taken all the dynamism out of the Separatists a lot of the time. The battle droids and the Separatist mantra seems to basically be the Daleks, you know, exterminate, exterminate. For the most part, it's just wipe out the enemy. Wipe them out, all of them. Whereas in this series, we don't see a lot of the Separatists, but we get a little bit more of the behind the scenes of what they're doing a couple of times, like with Dooku and Ventress and the scheming of Sidious talking to Dooku in that same scenario. We get to see this particular general. And, I mean, what do we get in the new series? We get tactical droids a lot of the time and Grievous running away. It seems like at least in this series, they handled the Separatists and made us feel like they really are a force that could possibly win this war, not by sheer numbers, but possibly because they might actually be a decent army. Do you guys see a difference in how the Separatists are portrayed here versus in the series?
If you asked that before Citadel, I think I probably would have said yes, there's a big difference. But I feel like in Citadel, they actually had a competent villain for the most part. Like I forget his name now, the crocodile guy. He was pretty good, but like I can see what you mean though by this. The Separatists come off a lot more competent and a lot more capable in this series, I think, than they do in the current stuff, just because unfortunately they've been kind of turning the villains, or at least the generals like Ventress and Grievous in the current series, into these kind of mustache twirling characters who cannot have a victory. And I'm not sure why. It's kind of frustrating, because in this I feel like the Separatists mostly win, which is a twist, and I like it a lot. It's refreshing.
Well, actually, they tell us why they never, or at least why Grievous never wins in the current series in this episode, because when he's training with Dooku, Dooku tells him that you need, oh, crap, I should have written this down. You need three things, and I don't
know. Not to suck, not to suck, and not to suck.
Yes, something like that.
It was fear. He needed to break them.
Surprise and intimidation.
Fear, surprise, and intimidation. Those are the three things that you need to break a Jedi. Or you need to retreat. That's what Dooku said. He said you need to have those three things or retreat. And I was like, wow.
Yeah, if anyone is lacking, run.
a Sith is saying retreat, you know? And I was like, wow, okay, that's, you know.
It's surprising to hear a Sith say back away from a situation and visit it at a better time for yourself. But that's exactly what he's saying. He's saying if one of those things is missing, run away and come back again when you have your ducks in a row.
In a training session. So this is like his official training motto is to run away unless he has these three things in there. And I thought, wow, okay. But I would have liked to see this scene before the scene, before the episode where Grievous is wiping out the Jedi, before the Shaggy episode, you know, where we have seen that Grievous has been taught to use these things and that's why the Jedi were afraid. So I would have liked to see actually that scene before the other one, before the actual quote-unquote introduction of Grievous.
You know where I would have liked to have seen it? I would have liked to have seen it in episode 1 or episode 2. I guess 2 since it's Dooku, but like I wish just overall, and this is a little off topic from Gendy here, but I wish overall that Grievous would have just somehow been name-dropped or at least just seen in the background of someone who's been with the Separatist all along. I think that would have been a neat thing to see Dooku say, all right, General Grievous, prepare your army, and we'll let you know when the Jedi are trying to escape. Okay, and then you don't see him again until episode 3. Something to where, you know, it makes sense that he just, like, comes out of nowhere. The one thing I will say about the way the scene played out, Baron, to your point, is that I kind of like to get that. I like getting that explanation after the fact, because you see him, you're wowed, you're amazed about what he just did to Jedi. Then it's like, oh, now it makes sense. And I don't think it's surprising that he's telling Grievous to retreat. I mean, it's not surprising that the Sith are saying that. They're saying it to someone who's not Force sensitive. That's one thing we got to remember about General Grievous is that, yeah, he's got all the skills of the lightsaber. He's very ruthless, but he still lacks the ability to manipulate the Force. And I think that's what Dooku is mindful of, is like, if you are not hitting on all these three cylinders, let's call them, these three tactics, then they're just going to whoop you up because they know how to use the Force and you need to get out of there. So I think the scene played out really well.
Yeah, I'm with Jerry on the idea that we definitely needed to get that wow moment with Grievous instead of being introduced to him in a training sequence. Although I would disagree as to why it would make sense that he would be telling him to retreat. Not necessarily because he's not Force sensitive, but remember, the Sith, the whole idea of the Sith, at least this incarnation of them for about the last 1,000 years, almost 1,000 years at this point, has been stay behind the scenes, manipulate, get into the right position, then strike when the time has come. It's all very tactical. And in a sense, that's what it's giving. You know, if you can't win, back off, fight another day. To me, that fits perfectly with the Sith mantra. We tend to think of the Sith as evil, domineering, attack, attack, kill, kill. But above all of that is make sure your plans work, make the decisions behind the scenes that are going to get you to the end game.
And I think you're right about how the Sith do it. But I think what we're seeing differently is that Dooku's not training a Sith. He's just training a general. And really, I guess, you know, if the episode 3 novel tells us anything, he's training really the person that they're eventually thinking that they're going to blame for the whole war anyway.
And, you know, you're correct. It's not like I didn't want the scene. It's good that we did get the scene. And I do have to agree that you did have to have a wow factor when you introduce Grievous. But, you know, you can have the wow factor in the training sequence, but it goes along with the way that the droids are acting by taking prisoners also. You know, it's smarter. You know, Dooku has changed his strategy in how he's running this war, and he's trying to be smarter about it. And so it all flows together. It all makes sense.
I want to revisit something that Jerry said in his comments of a couple minutes ago about how if Grievous had been introduced or name dropped in, say, episode 1 or episode 2, then his role in episode 3 would have been a little bit more believable, or would have been made him a better villain. Now, let's say, and here's one for you for the special edition of Phantom Menace, George. Let's say we had been introduced to Grievous in episode 1 as, say, like Darth Maul's training droid, and then seen how he was merged with a general in episode 2, and then episode 3, we get the finished product. That would have been much more... That's the word I'm looking for. Not rewarding, but a much more fulfilling storyline than what we got from Grievous.
I could have at least respected. I could have at least respected the reason he was there to begin with. What's funny is we see this Anakin has awesome montage. He breaks all the bubbles the Jedi are trapped in. He takes one piece of a big, large droid, throws it into the piece of another large droid, and all the Jedi are kind of free and shaking their fists, like, yeah, yeah, everything's great. And then the next thing we see is Anakin going home with a big scar on his face. I mean, what, did Aayla Secura do that to him because she was pissed or what? It's just really funny how it plays out. We see this battle where Anakin is victorious, then he goes home with a scar.
Well, they had to give us the sympathetic lead in to our Bow Chicka Bow Wow moment. We know that this montage at least ends about 9 months before Revenge of the Sith, because the scene there at the end, as it's been explained, although I'm sure this has been erased now after all these years and tons of other stuff coming along, but originally they were so proud because the lights out in the little window scene was the insinuation that that was the conception of Luke and Leia. Right, Nathan?
Okay, was I the only one who didn't get this? Like, that went completely over my head. I had no idea what that was supposed to be suggesting. Like, I don't know.
No, I'm with you, Jen. I didn't get that until Dan said it in our pre-show little discussion here. I'm just like, oh, right.
You know what's funny? They've come back to this. It's kind of weird. Like, they were meaning for that to sort of be a hint here. I mean, they weren't going to say it explicitly, but they were meaning for it to sort of be a hint. It winds up not really working time-wise somewhat whenever you actually start fitting it into the broader continuity. And they say, oh, well, that's just one night they spent together. That's not necessarily when they were conceived, basically covering their butts about the months not working out anymore. And eventually, though, what we find is this whole scene is kind of a weird mixture of things, because her seeing his scar for the first time and touching his face was also covered in a completely different source. So she apparently sees the scar multiple times for the first time. She must have some kind of amnesia. He just rocks her so hard, I guess.
She's in denial.
Yeah, she's in denial.
Oh, dear Lord. And then,
but no, recently, Luke Van Horn, who helps me out on the Star Wars timeline every now and then, mentions that in the 20th issue of the Clone Wars magazine in the UK, the one that we're getting sort of recycled content for here in the U.S., on page 27 of the 20th issue, it establishes that Luke and Leia are conceived prior to the Citadel episodes from season 3 of the current series, which, again, that sort of plays havoc with how we're supposed to fit it all together. Who knows if they're actually going to stick to what they said in the magazine or this scene being the conception, but they keep coming back to this. Like, they keep wanting to show us that moment without being able to, of course, show it in a kid's show. For what it's worth, we also ran into something like this when we were dealing with the Essential Atlas. Because when I was in the process of putting together dates for the Thrawn campaign map and the Zinge map, there's this scene in Tatooine Ghost that they say, psst, that's probably when Jaina and Jason Solo were conceived. And I checked with Leland Chee, got the okay to just sort of assume that, even if it's not necessarily set in stone. And the dates for both of those maps, in a sense, are built around when were they conceived in Tatooine Ghost versus when are they born later in the Thrawn trilogy, and how do you keep 9 months separating those? So Star Wars does pay attention to birthing cycles and seems to be sort of preoccupied with it lately.
But let's be real. I mean, this is a husband and wife. This is legitimate activity. He's been away at war and comes home and Padme's just
legitimate
happy.
Activity.
You like that legitimate?
I love it.
I mean, it's one of those things. It's like you don't look at it and say, "Oh, wow, they're doing something dirty." No, they're married. He's been away at war. Padme is like, "Oh, just, you know, thank God you're alive." What else are they gonna do?
You know, I must be missing this whole thing because I don't see how her touching his face, people assumed that they've consummated their marriage at that point. I don't understand.
It's the light turning off at night right afterwards. It's not the touching the face. It's just that scene connects them together. And, well, you know, it does make sense if they were meaning for this not to be canonical with everything else, not to have to worry about any comics, any novels, or anything. If you really look at this, he leaves from here, goes off to the Outer Rim sieges so that he's on the mud planet or whatever you want to call it for a big chunk of the next part of the episode. And then they go straight from there to Nelvan and then on to episode 3. Now, granted, that's not exactly how it winds up playing out once they start shoehorning everything in. But in a sense, this may be one of the last times they see each other. But then again, that kind of brings up that, well, wait a second. If this is the last time they see each other, are you saying he's gone for 9 whole months, that we're supposed to believe that all this stuff we just saw is 9 months worth? Well, at least a few months are mentioned by Obi-Wan saying they've already been on that planet for X amount of months. I think it's 3. So they it logically somewhat makes sense for them to think this might be their last time to see each other and conceive the children.
Well, and my point is that there's nothing about Padme just touching his face. There's nothing about the light going off that should imply that as husband and wife, that'd be doing something. It's just the fact they're husband and wife. I mean, sure, it makes sense. And I totally get now that you said that, Nathan, that if this is the, then they go off to those Outer Rim sieges that Anakin talks about in episode three, then yeah, I actually took it very much so in episode three that he's been gone for several months because she says, hey, Anakin, she reveals it to him right there. Hey, I'm pregnant. And I couldn't exactly like, you know, send you a text or anything about it. And oh, by the way, we, you know, obviously we see her at the end of the movie delivering the baby. So apparently he has been gone for a very significant amount of time.
And I just have one more thing, Rockstar. Is that Chewbacca and his son? Because Chewbacca has been, it's already been established in the holiday special that Chewbacca has a son. So when I see this Wookiee, is I look at him and there's no bandolier, but I hear the growls and it sounds like Chewbacca, because even in episode three, Tarful kind of sounds a little bit different. You know, they all sound a little bit different when they growl. But so is this Chewbacca and his son?
That's actually not Chewbacca, though of course it'd be easy to make the mistake because, I mean, he is in episode three, obviously, and now he's in the current series. That is actually two new Wookiee characters, Tarkov and Jacoba. They are named after Gendy Tartakovsky and his son. And the only way that we would know for sure, just by looking at it, that there's no way that could be Chewbacca and his son is that his son was not actually born until about a year before A New Hope. So he's really, really young in the holiday special.
You know, that's what I love about this show. Folks can tune in and think, you know, I'm a pretty big geek. I know a lot about Star Wars. And then we bring up stuff that nobody in their right mind sits around and thinks about.
Your mama thinks. No, I'm kidding. I would say, though, there is a tie here, though, because not only is this a tie-in with the Wookiees here to episode three, but they did more with the idea of Kashyyyk leading up into episode three. This was one of several different sources that were trying to set that up. You got the Republic Commando video game. You got other EU sources. So, I mean, they don't do much with Kashyyyk here, but this is meant to set up episode three. And this was part of that multimedia push to sort of get us ready for that, which, among other things, launched the Republic Commando games. So, I mean, it is something that bears mentioning, even if it's just a quick little clip in this episode.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and we were definitely going to bring it up. It was just Baron's question whether this is Chewbacca or not that brought it. But yeah, like you said, this was everywhere. Once the news was dropped that we were going to go to Kashyyyk, we were going to go to the Wookiee homeworld. It was going to be kind of the doppelganger of Return of the Jedi instead of short furry things. We were going to see really tall furry things running around. It was everywhere. It was in Republic Commando. It was in Battlefront. It was here. So it was everywhere. Everybody was excited about this.
Heck, it was one of the TV guide covers. I mean, they had four images for Revenge of the Sith to put on those covers, and one of them was a bunch of Wookiees on Kashyyyk. So I think you're right, Dan. Everybody was expecting, I think, Kashyyyk to be like very central to what was going to happen in this movie.
Unfortunately, it wasn't quite as... We didn't spend as much time there as we did, say, Endor, because we were on 25 different fronts at once there towards the culmination of Order 66. But we at least got to see a little bit. Yes, we can't be too... Beggars can't be choosers, as they say.
Just be glad they didn't keep calling it Kazook.
But we've skipped ahead a little bit. We did mention that after our Anakin is awesome montage, Anakin and Obi-Wan are on this mud planet. Do we ever get a name for that mud planet, Nathan?
I don't believe so. Not off the top of my head.
Okay.
If this was Transformers, it would just be the planet of mud.
Like the planet of junk. Where's the planet of daisies, I wonder?
And since when did nasty bugs become the living force? That's what I want to know.
Hey, anything alive houses the Force. Did you not pay attention to Empire Strikes Back?
Then he should be...
Luminous beings we are.
Eating womp rats. It's like, why did all of a sudden Anakin has this taste for the living Force bugs?
Dude, that almost made me wretch again. That and the crazy sausage Twizzler thing that they turned Dirge into, those two together made me almost sick here. I haven't felt that queasy watching something on a sci-fi series since the ear eel creepy things on us in Wrath of Khan.
He put tings in my ears.
Yeah, the eating of the bugs was a little bit nasty. But we find out that Anakin has discovered a secret way into the into the Separatist encampment. They go through the tunnel. They swim through the sewer.
Obi-Wan makes his really badly delivered line, right?
Yes. Once again, we get another original trilogy line delivered horribly.
Wait, which one was it? I'm actually drawing a blank on that.
What an incredible smell you've discovered.
You've discovered.
Oh, right.
At least something like, I have you now, or I have a bad feeling about this, is something that people would tend to probably say from time to time, but how many times do you randomly string together a thought that creates the phrase, what an incredible smell you've discovered?
You know what's really weird about that is that that's an instance where the character that said it here was not the character that said it in the OT, though.
This is true.
Which is even more weird that, you know, it's not like that's just Obi-Wan's phrase and he uses it whenever. I mean, I'm sure we all have those weird phrases. I mean, heck, Nathan, tonight I think you introduced like six new phrases that you'll probably use the rest of your life. But, you know, that's not one that's just like, that almost makes it seem more like it's a common Star Wars universe universe thing to say.
Well, you see, Obi-Wan had this vision of the guy he'd be traveling with 19 years in the future, and he heard it in a dream.
Speaking of Obi-Wan, I'm really liking how dry and like sarcastic he is in this episode. I don't think he's like this anywhere else quite to this extent, but he's so snarky. Like everything out of his mouth is this dry, like sarcastic, obnoxious comment. I think it's really fun. I kind of like it.
Jen, I totally agree with you. This Obi-Wan is so funny, and it makes sense because all I kept thinking when Obi-Wan's laying down and he's trying to reposition himself so the water stops dropping on his head and he looks miserable, all I kept thinking was, this is Darth Sidious' way of wearing Obi-Wan down. Because Anakin is go, 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 go. He's ready to fight it all the time. Obi-Wan is old school Jedi. You know, he's peacekeeper. He's not warrior Jedi like these new Jedi that are coming out. He's from the old school. So he's miserable. He wants peace. And it makes sense to me when I saw that. I'm like, this is a way that Sidious is wearing down Obi-Wan, you know, wearing him down so he can lose control. He can't keep Anakin under his wing anymore, you know, and he's complaining. And I loved it. I love this portrayal of Obi-Wan. It kind of opened up the whole, because Obi-Wan has a good sense of humor. He's always had a good sense of humor. So, you know, but it made sense that this is Insidious's overall plan for them.
You can tell that these guys definitely had gotten to see or maybe seen a script or something. They were aware of Obi-Wan's character in episode 3. I mean, this is definitely a character that you can see saying things like always on the move and hello there casually to General Grievous. So this is very believable to how we see Obi-Wan when we do finally see him in Revenge of the Sith.
Or even in the current Clone Wars series when he's talking to, you know, Nathan says it all the time when he's talking to Ventress, hello, my sweet. You know, who says that to their enemy, you know?
I'm sure someday there'll be a retcon or a story that tells of their liaison.
I didn't need to think about that.
That was the first thing people were discussing on the message boards based on that quote in the Clone Wars movie in 08 was there some previous relationship between those two? They didn't take it as sarcastic or a joke at the beginning. People were actually asking, was there a little bit of going on with those two?
In season 6, we'll find out that actually Asajj Ventress is in disguise as Satine.
There you go. And there'll be like a scene where they don't tell you what's going on, but the lights just go off.
Wait, we've had this discussion before.
It's deja vu. It's deja vu.
So Anakin and Obi-Wan bring down the shield with Obi-Wan's pocket full of explosive marbles. I wonder if those are standard issue. And once the shield is down, they're walking away while the clones charge in. I guess that means their part of the job is over. A little odd, but okay.
Send in the expendables. We're done.
We get.
Hey, wasn't that great? They're just walking out like, yeah, I got the shield down. You guys go clean up.
They're walking out all smoothie. We did our job. You know, though the best part is they could have just been like wiping their hands in front of them as they were walking. That could have been better. But did we get to see a new form of armor for Cody? Because I swore I thought I saw two antennas on both sides of his arm shoulder plates, and it looked like his paint, you know, was a little bit different. Is that a new armor for Cody?
Are you about to ask for an action figure?
Always trying to ask for a new Clone Wars action figure.
I think that's just creative interpretation.
No, we got this, Cody.
Yeah, in non-posable animated form.
It's the animated series.
Talking about the minifigures?
No, the first round.
Did you not listen to me and Dan talk this a few weeks ago in Star Wars Action News?
I enhanced it, yes. But you didn't send me the exact picture. You sent me some. Oh, you did send me those. It was a three clone set or something like that, right?
Cody, even in episode three, Cody's helmet has like the one antenna on one side, and kind of like a miniature antenna or something sticking out of the other. I would guess they're probably basing it on early sketches of the way that the armor was being designed for the character. I would bet.
Yeah, that's what I took it as. I didn't take it as a new kind of armor. Just kind of, you know, this is what they had this many months before Revenge of the Sith came out. They knew he was going to be orange. They knew it was going to be a little bit different. Instead of a visor, they literally gave him headlights, but...
I mean, this is a guy who also... I mean, how many people have antennas on their shoulders? I mean, come on. He's antennas all over the place.
Yeah, he is kind of always in communication. We finish the planet of mud. We get our useless Wookiee scene, and then... Well, not useless, but we get our non-Chewbacca Wookiee scene. And then we get a montage of CIS victories. Very sad to see Max Rebo's folk are enslaved.
Nah, it's not. No, that didn't really trigger a reaction to me. It's cool. It's fine.
They're giant. They're giant puppy dog eyes. Did stir anything in you there, Jerry?
They're diaper wearing piano players. They're fine.
You heartless bugger.
I kicked the puppy.
That's right. Public Voices Radio Network, where we condone kicking of puppies. So then we get our not so urgent call from Palpatine and Mace. Now, why do we say not so urgent anymore, Nathan?
That would be because this mission is supposed to be the one to Nelvan, of course, named after Nelvana, the droids and Ewoks company. That is supposed to
wait
be
minute,
the
wait a minute, wait, stop. What? That was actually named after the company?
Yes,
like
that was
intentionally?
That was intentionally named after him. That's
no!
Just like C-3PO was intentionally designed like the droids one. That's why he's able to bend so much.
Wow.
But no, they wanted this to be, or at least they intended this in the cartoon before it had to be shoehorned in, as I keep saying. They intended it to be the lead up into episode 3, as we'll see by the time we get to 25. It was meant to happen at the same time that Coruscant is being invaded, as we'll see intercutting over the next 3 episodes. But they also had a book called Labyrinth of Evil and a comic called Reversal of Fortune that was running as a web strip on StarWars.com, and both of those matched a little bit closer than this did, even though it was supposed to be working in conjunction at least a little bit with Labyrinth of Evil. But you know what happens when they're working on stuff at the same time. They sometimes go in slightly different directions. In any event, they finally at one point said, you know what? We like the way the cartoon series works. We're going to take the last mission before they get their message and head off to save Palpatine. We're going to make that one from the book second to last, and Nelvan the last. So the cartoon series still works as a perfect lead into Revenge of the Sith. But they never put it in writing other than on the official site's forums. And then came, I believe it was the New Essential Chronology, and they reversed the decision in that. So now what happens is they get this message saying, hey, we need help. And there's this break where they don't go off to Nelvan. You know, General Grievous is on Nelvan. Okay, we'll get to it. And there's a few more missions in the middle, like the comic book Obsession, the last appearance of Asajj Ventress in the Clone Wars. And then they go to Nelvan. And even then, that's not going to lead right into Revenge of the Sith, because they're going to wind up going to a planet called Tithe between that and Revenge of the Sith. And all this intercutting, all this great juxtaposition between Coruscant and Nelvan we're going to get all throughout the rest of this series, they no longer take place at the same time at all. We're seeing essentially the future and the past intercut with each other. The end of this series gets mangled by the fact that it didn't match Labyrinth of Evil and Reversal of Fortune. And again, it's C canon, not T canon or G canon. They bent this to fit with everything else rather than vice versa, like what happens now.
And that's really a shame, because the back and forth, like you said, does work really, really well. So Obi-Wan and Anakin and their strike force, which looks like a decent sized fleet, even though they never received backup, which we'll talk about, arrive at Nelvan, and they land on the planet. They're attacked by a giant monster. Anakin kills the giant monster, and we meet the Na'vi. Or no, the we meet
that's
the Nelvan.
Nelvanites, or whatever they call it. Now, you notice that the...
Yeah,
come on,
they don't look exactly like the Na'vi.
They're from a planet called Nelvan? Come on.
That creature is the Horax, and interestingly enough, I would bet... Now, this I don't know for sure. I would bet that is meant to be a play on the Gorax from the first Ewoks television film, the live-action film. It's way too close of a name for that to probably be an accident, given how much they're dipping back into early Star Wars for name references.
Those really big things?
Yeah, the really big. Wait, in which one? The real. And it's the Gorax is the really big thing in the.
In the first one.
Yeah, in Caravan of Courage, the Horax is the really big one that we see here, as opposed to the little raccoon that thankfully the clones don't shoot at this time.
Have it been arcs, they would have. But you know, to go back to the theory that, oh, I thought you were dead. You know, this actually could have worked for that because Anakin and Obi-Wan land on the planet. Their entire squad is wiped out. We never see another clone until they're picked up. You know, if word of this horrible things going horribly awry, we've lost contact with the Jedi sent to the planet, had gotten back to Coruscant, that would kind of make sense for why Padme thinks that they've been, that maybe Anakin's been killed. Plausible, however. So we're introduced to the Delvanians, and that's where this episode ends.
Bum, bum, bum.
Dun, dun, dun.
Will Anakin survive? Yeah, of course.
Will Anakin have his butt handed to him by a bunch of women and children?
But how will this bode for Anakin's different hands in episode 2 and episode 3? That's the big continuity clincher, this sucker. That and his vision of his destiny. Coming soon on Republic Forces Radio Network.
All right, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to hear us continue our discussion of the Clone Wars micro series and invite everyone to come back next week when we will discuss Chapter 23 and the attack on Coruscant.
See you, Dan.
See you next time.
See ya.
Trouble again.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
Whoa, that's a horrible sound.
What the hell was that?
That was just me trying to make a horrible sound.
Success. Congratulations. Okay, somebody's watching the episodes. Who's behind, Barrett?
I wasn't on mute. Can you guys see me, by the way?
No, like, you're in California.
No, I'm talking. Don't you guys, can anybody see anybody from video chat?
I don't have the video chat turned on.
So I have internet connection today.
I will say this, it was really funny with this past week's show when you hear Barrett perfectly fine during the conversation about the show, and then Dan, you inserted our discussion about the preview, and all of a sudden it sounds like Barrett's in a mall.
They're making announcements in the back.
Everybody's going to think Barrett actually lives at the train station.
I talked to the manager too, and I said, thank you very much for letting me do the podcast, record, you know, and she was like, oh, it's okay. You know, you asked the rest of the customers if it was cool. That's my best manager impression. She was cool. She was cool about it.
It's much better than mine. All my female impersonations sound pretty much the same. They all sound like the Queen of England, so.
Oh,
it's bad. Whenever, like, I'm reading my daughter's stories at night, and they're about princesses, and it's like, it's Snow Watson! No.
Wow.
Bad.
Oh. Okay, I want to go for the Nathan P. Butler award this week for plugging something.
Oh, Lord.
Okay. If you look in your Target ad, okay. If you buy a Bounty 8 giant roll, you will get a free 50-count napkins decorative dispenser. It's a little carton, little dispenser with for 50 napkins. And I just want to say I might have designed it.
Try going on a toy run with Bounty and you have to go down the paper towel aisle at every store you go to.
Dan knows far more about facial tissues and napkins than he ever dared was possible.
At least when you pee yourself with excitement, there's plenty of paper towels around.
What?
Well, that's what I use Charmin for, Nathan. You better squeeze all the Charmin you can when Mr. Whipple's not around. Put your hand in the microwave and give yourself a tan.
Why are you singing Dare to Be Stupid?
Because it has the word Charmin in it, so I figured we had to get the song out of the way.
One of my topics was, is that Chewbacca and his son?
No.
Okay, well, that was one of my topics.
Fair enough. And the other,
a topic means we talk about it under recording conditions.
And why is that not Chewbacca then? Either why is it or why isn't it? Because I know he is established in the...
Because he's not the only Wookiee on the planet.
Yeah, that's what I'm going with.
Is he? Okay, well, we'll save that for the conversation.
Yeah, those are Wookiees named after Gendy and his son. This is the one that starts with T.C. Carson playing the overzealous general who gets his ass whooped. That's where we left off.
Yeah, I love his eye twitches.
How many Jedi they sent? 450?
Oh my god. It's Transformers all over again.
Wow. All right.
And I'm feeling kind of sad. Should I say this is our last episode?
No, you shouldn't. You should just stop with hello, everybody. This is.
Hello, everybody. I had a good joke, too. I was going to do the ooh ee, ooh ah ah, ding bang, walla walla bing bang, you know, like they do in Greece when they're getting out
that
of
school. That was Alvin the Chipmunks.
Dude, that's not god. Greece.
That was the witch doctor.
Well, I'm going to look up Greece.
I want to see that version of Greece. But.
So it's good to be back. Do you want me to do it over again, Rockstar?
No, you're fine.
Okay.
Somewhere, John Travolta's career is spinning.
You broke Dan.
Say you killed Dan.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. Well, kids, we started half an hour early so we could get all the episodes in tonight. Now we're time's up and we're done with one. No. Wow.
We're fine, Jerry.
Glad to hear it.
But before we get into our discussion, here is I think it'll be done by now.
Oh yeah, I don't think you need that one on this. Yeah.
Never mind. As you were.
We'll be done next week.
And did you notice? This is chapter 22 that aired in 2005 on March 22.
Ooh.
No, Ray, hey. And I didn't. But
hey, but Dan, I got a question.
Definitely the 22nd. Definitely the 22nd. Oh, you're asking me. I'm sorry. I was like, I don't care. Can I ask a question about that while we're on the subject?
Only if you promise not to say the word taint anymore.
I promise.
Hold on. There's an important part of that montage we didn't talk about yet.
You skipped the...
Well, I wasn't going to say it like that, but...
Wait a minute.
Well, you were going to edit it anyway. Oh, he's going to have to cut that.
Oh, come on.
All right.
Oh my goodness.
I'm sorry. It was there, and it just had to be said. If I hadn't said it, it would have been boiling over, and I would have fit it in somewhere else in something not as easy to edit. Edit, cut, cut, cut.
Cut, cut, cut. Nathan, you're the dirtiest on the planet, and you're a teacher. Jesus Christ. you talk like a drunken sailor.
Hey.
I learned it by listening to the children.
You know what? You guys are going to get Jen all riled up, and then I'm going to have to be editing her again. So.
It's more like Jerry's going to get riled up. Jerry's in the choir.
This is one of those old,
Jen.
This is like one of those old jokes from high school. It's like, hey, don't cuss like that. Cuss like this.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the Star Wars equivalent of the Lois Lane Superman joke, okay? That's it.
Okay. All right, have we all gotten it out of our systems now? Are we ready to go on to as
he
Nathan
got it out of his system.
Uh-huh.
All right, yeah, let's go.
All right.
I just want to say that, Nathan, when you were talking about Doctor Who like that, that must what it must be like when I'm talking to my wife about Star Wars. Like, what? What is a dialect or whatever? I know it's a tangent.
He likes the bald chicks?
Can you say liaison one more time, Nathan?
Liaison?
I'd also like to point out that Jerry just came up with a new, not acronym, when he's referring to me and him at the same time, it's not me and Dan, it's man.
Did you catch that? I was correcting myself because I merged words. Yeah, man. Well, you know, whatever you could save a syllable, that's just, you know, more life to live.
Absolutely. So Anakin, who just went away? What just happened? I just had weird sounds in my ear. Who's sending me messages? Don't send me.
Baron is trying to upload the picture into the thing.
I stopped it. Does that mess you up, Dan?
It just distracts me, and my ADD can't handle things like that.
I stopped it. I was just trying to send you all a picture of the actual Clone Wars toy to show you that it came with a jetpack, but no.
That's right. Jerry said he was right. We believe him.
But no. No antennae, but with jetpack. Anyway, go ahead. I'm listening.
For the love of God, no. Let's move on.
Okay.
Says the guy who talks too damn much.
I want to thank everybody for joining us.
Get it right, boy.
Thank you for joining with us to Forum Devastator.
All right. There you go. Everybody, anybody who needs to make a bathroom or a drink run, do it now. You have 2 minutes.
Good timing, yes.
Hey, that's where the other people talking comes in. You mute and you run and do that. I can't tell you the number of times I've been glad that I had a mute when I was taking a leak not some 10 feet away from the microphone. Too much information?
I just set up my recording.
I just wanted to know.
Apartment. I'm just saying. It's my...
What I want to know is when is there a time that you are not talking for more than 30 seconds that you can do that?
It's quickly. What I want to know is...
The hardest part is getting to the restroom and getting back and finding a way to hold my earphone plug without having to take it out of my ears where it's not going to dangle in the danger zone. That's the other
two. Okay.
TMI.
I'm just saying.
Man, dude.
That is. And I'm gonna say this.
Looks like any log is the same again.
What I want to know is what...
Yeah.
I was listening to Footloose today, and I was rocking out to Footloose in my car today. That was Kenny Loggins, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to listen to a Kevin Bacon song, you know, in honor of his performances, you know, in First Class. So I'm listening to Footloose and Kenny Loggins today, and my buddy was like, turn that down, brother.